Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
And no matter where you've been or where you might currently find yourself, it's not over. When God is in it, there is no limit. New breeding.
Because we're talking about the shooting that killed 17-year-old Trayvon Benjamin Martin on February 26, 2012. May he rest in peace. Our topic tonight is, does the evidence prove Trayvon Martin was murdered? We plan to discuss the offense report, the 911 calls, eyewitness accounts, the timeline, Zimmerman's history of calls to police, along with Zimmerman's statement to police on the night he killed Trayvon Martin. Was there a consistent pattern of George Zimmerman profiling black men as suspicious? And does that indicate a motive to kill Trayvon Martin? That's what we're talking about tonight. But before we begin, we want to remind you that the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. Actually, we have several guests that we're waiting on tonight. We're not certain if there is a problem getting in on the phone line, but we're waiting on several. But what we're going to do in the interim is we're going to play for you. I guess I'm going to try to set the stage. I've spent the last couple of days poring over the file from the authorities down there in Sanford about this particular shooting, and I have been amazed by what was not revealed in the media. To my surprise, I thought we'd heard it all, but obviously we had not. So we're going to try to set the stage for you to better understand what led up to this shooting. There appears to have been several calls made to police prior to the call made the night Trayvon Martin was killed. Investigators revealed that on August 3rd, August 4th, October 6th of 2011, as well as February 2nd, 2012, George Zimmerman reported suspicious persons, all black males, in the Retreat neighborhood to the Sanford Police Department. According to records, all of Zimmerman's suspicious persons calls while residing in the Retreat neighborhood have indicated black males as suspicious. So tonight we're going to begin right there. We're going to play for you because I want you to see where I am in terms of the information that I've come across this week, and then use it in the jury box tonight and decide for yourself. What do you think? Did George Zimmerman kill Trayvon Martin in self-defense, or was it a case of cold-blooded murder? So this is the first call that Zimmerman made to police about a suspicious person in their neighborhood. I'm going to play for you the tape. I believe this is from August 3rd. Take a listen.
Paul, where is he?
Sanford Police Department, Lawrence Quarters, Petra.
Hey, our neighborhood got burglarized or robbed today, and my wife, saw one of the kids that did it, and we see someone that matches his description in the neighborhood right now again.
Okay, and what's your address out there?
I'd rather not give out my address because he's obviously in the neighborhood, but it's Retreat View Circle. You can use 1111, which is the clubhouse.
Okay, so does he live in the neighborhood, or he's just out walking?
I don't know. It's the first time I've ever seen him.
Okay. And what is your name?
My name is George.
Your last name, George?
Zimmerman.
And your phone number you're calling from? Okay, and is he white, black, or Hispanic?
Black.
What's
My
he
wife
wearing?
Talked to Detective Walker and gave him a description of the guy we see now.
Okay, what's he wearing right now?
A white tank top and black shorts, brown sandals, and black socks.
Okay, and is he walking?
Yes.
Okay, and so is he near the
the back entrance to the neighborhood.
So is it the back entrance?
He just went between the houses to the back?
Yes.
Shoot.
He was looking at the car.
I'm going to... Why not?
Don't call.
Okay. Okay, we'll get an officer out there to check the area.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay, that appears to be George Zimmerman and his wife reporting a black male in their neighborhood that appears suspicious. The date on that was August 3rd, 2011. This is the second call that was made to police August 4th from George Zimmerman.
Sanford Police Department, my name is recorded. This is Nicole. How can I help you?
Hi, there was a break-in in my neighborhood recently. And two youths that match the description of the people, my wife ID'd them and saw them. They're back in the neighborhood.
What's the address?
You can use 1111 Retreat View Circle, Sanford, Florida. Or you know that address.
Twin Lake townhomes?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And are they, what do they look like? Are they white, black, or Hispanic?
Black males, two black males in their late teens. One's wearing a black white beater, black tank top, and black shorts. And the other one's wearing a black shirt and blue jeans. And they're at the back gate of the neighborhood.
Okay. Approximately how old are they?
Late teens.
Okay. You want to leave your name or number?
I can leave my name and my number, and I'll actually be at the back gate to let the officers in, because
okay.
There's no code there.
Uh-huh. What's your name?
It's George. And it's...
Okay.
If you'll let the officers know, they typically run away quickly, and I think they head over to the neighborhood, the next neighborhood over, so you may want to send the unit over to Calabria Cove.
What's it called?
Calabria Cove.
Okay. Calabria Cove. All right, I'll let them know when they do. They are on the way, okay?
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, that was George Zimmerman making his second phone call to police August 4th. Now we're going to play for you the call that he made on August 6th, 2011, about another suspicious black man.
7 o'clock. Sanford Police, this is my name, recorder Sharon speaking.
Hi, I was just calling because we've had a lot of break-ins in our neighborhood recently, and I'm on the neighborhood watch, and there's two suspicious characters at the gate of my neighborhood. I've never seen them before. I have no idea what they're doing. They're just hanging out, loitering.
What's the address?
1111 Retreat View Circle. And that's Sanford,
Florida.
Is that
the Twin Lakes townhouses?
Yes, ma'am. No, I'm Retreat at Twin Lakes, yes.
So, yes, that was Twin Lakes townhouses?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great. Can I get your name and a callback number?
George.
George, can I get a last name?
Zimmerman.
And Mr. Zimmerman, can you describe the two individuals?
Two African-American males. They looked, I know one was in a white Impala.
How old did they look to you?
Mid to late 20s, early 30s.
They're in a Chevy Impala. Did you get a license plate?
A white, no. It's a white Chevrolet sedan. It's either an Impala or a lumen of it. I think it's an Impala.
Can you still see them?
No, ma'am. I didn't want to attract attention.
How long ago were they out there?
Just, 10 seconds ago. I just called the scene system.
Okay. All right, we'll send someone out there and see what we can do, okay?
Thank you, ma'am. Have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, now that was the third call that George Zimmerman made to police about a suspicious black person or persons in the neighborhood. And we're going to play for you the last call before the incident that occurred on February 26th. This one happened on February 2nd, 2012. This is George Zimmerman again making a call to the police about a suspicious person.
Sanford Police Department, this line's been recorded. This is Renee.
Hey, can I get an officer to...
Your name?
George.
What's going on there, George?
I'm with the Neighborhood Watch, and we've had some burglaries and vandalisms lately, and this gentleman was walking in the neighborhood. I've seen before on trash days, going around picking up trash. I don't know what his deal is.
Is he white, black, or Hispanic?
It's black.
What is he wearing?
He's wearing a black leather jacket, a black bomber hat.
Black, what kind of, a black, what kind of hat?
Like a bomber hat, like the ones that have the ears, like
okay.
That you can fold down.
Black leather jacket, black hat, and what else?
And like flannel printed pajama pants.
And what is he doing?
he keeps going to this guy's house. I know him. I know the resident. He's Caucasian. And he's going up to the house and then going along the side of it and then coming to the street and then going back to the side of it. I don't know what he's doing. I don't want to approach him personally. If you have an officer available, I'd probably have him stop on Reinhardt across the street from Walter Meads Bentley and go around the back.
What's it, George, what's your telephone number you can be reached at? Please look at one out there. Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Okay, y'all. That was four calls that George Zimmerman made to police leading up to the night that he killed Trayvon Martin. August 3rd of 2011, August 4th of 2011, October 6th of 2011, and February 2nd, 2012. So do you see a pattern? I don't know. Is it consistent with what happened the night that Trayvon Martin was killed? Well, we're going to get into it tonight. Y'all, listen. We're waiting on some of my guests to come in, but we're going to go ahead and get started. Tonight we have Mr. A.J. Houston, a poet and author. Also with us tonight is supposed to be Alberta Parrish. She's the editor-in-chief of Freedom Tribune, an online magazine. She's also the author of The Evil Within Him, a suspense novel published in 2007. We're also waiting on Mr. Brian Sturgis and Mr. Robert Coffey. But we're going to open up the phone lines and get started. Good evening, AJ. How are you?
I'm doing great, Carrie, and you?
Absolutely.
How are you today?
I'm good. I'm not sure about my second line I'm opening, but I'm going to hope that this is Alberta Parrish. Good evening.
Good evening. How you doing?
Fine. How you doing?
I'm wonderful.
Oh, good, good, good. Well, then, listen, y'all heard these calls that Zimmerman has made to police, four different calls, all about black males in the neighborhood looking suspicious. Do you see a pattern? Alberta, we'll start with you.
Oh, yes. Yeah. You know what? I see a pattern with George Zimmerman profiling young black men criminalizing them as potential criminals or potential burglars or, you know, whatever he feels about black men. And, you know, this entire society has already criminalized black men and women, and that's why 90% of the prison population consists of black people today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the entire society is basically, you know, is basically criminalizing black people as being potential future criminals as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not that this young man ever committed a crime against anyone, but
mm-hmm.
because he's a black male, he happens to have been walking through the neighborhood on his way back to his father's girlfriend's house when George Zimmerman spotted him and felt that this guy looked like he was up to no good. That's what he said. He looked like he was up to no good, and he looked like he was on drugs. And all this based on the fact that this young man was wearing a hoodie.
Mm-hmm.
He had black skin.
Mm-hmm.
And because there had been prior burglaries in the neighborhood prior to him zeroing in on Trayvon Martin on the night of February 26, 2012.
Okay.
So, you know, like I said, I mean, you don't have to already be a criminal to be labeled as a criminal in America.
That's good.
That's my opinion.
AJ Houston, is there a pattern there?
No. Well, there's definitely a pattern, but there's, you know, we say there's no prejudice in America today, but it's evident because we don't have to cover it up anymore. But if you listen to the calls from, in the sequence of days, it started from one burglary to there has been a lot of burglaries. There's been burglaries in the neighborhood.
Ooh.
And there was no calls made to say that there was a burglar at this particular residence. It's each time he just looked like he fabricated the existence of a problem just because he saw a black male. And the first call, he said he had never seen him before, but his wife gave a description, and he fit the description, so it was like he saw him before because he had on, if you look at the clothes they were wearing, mostly it was a black shirt and black shorts, which was the only criteria to be the burglar.
Sure. I didn't even catch that, AJ, but I have to agree. I absolutely agree. Looks like Mr. Brian Sturgis has joined us. Good evening, Mr. Sturgis. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
I'm good. Did you hear the calls that Zimmerman had made to the police?
Yeah, I did. I actually read some actual text on it and got to see some of the ridiculous things that was said and how little sense statements make. So, yeah, I did some research on that in the past week or so.
You know, one thing I know, and I'm someone who studied criminal justice in college, one thing I see consistent with George, and we'll also see this when I play the non-emergency call that he made the night that he killed Trayvon Martin. George Zimmerman understands what to say to police. There's a language. It's kind of like someone who knows how to speak Pig Latin talking to another person who understands how to speak Pig Latin. There's a code. There's a rhythm to it. And I think I see a rhythm and a code language, a cueing, a subliminal messages that he seems to send out each time he's making these calls. It's as though, you know, everything is suspicious that doesn't look like him. You know, so
right.
This person is black, so obviously he doesn't belong here, so y'all need to come right out and see what's going on because this person is not fitting in with the rest of us, which, you know, and I say this, y'all, with a heavy heart tonight because I spent the last couple of days going through this file, and I am amazed, and I say that, amazed at what the media did not tell us about this case. I'm amazed because there's so many things, and the file that I got was pretty in-depth. And so I know if they gave me this file, they probably gave it to the other members of the media. And so I'm very shocked, I must say, the stuff that was not ever mentioned from the time of the shooting till now. So what I want to do now, y'all, is I want y'all to listen to the non-emergency call that George Zimmerman made to police just minutes before he killed Trayvon Martin. Now, remember and keep in mind everything you just heard, and now we're going to play that call that Zimmerman made about Trayvon being in the same community and see if there's a consistency. Is there a pattern? Here we go.
Sanford Police Department. Line is being recorded. Sean.
Hey, we've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. It's Retrieview Circle. The best address I can give you is 111 Retrieview Circle. This guy looks like he's up to no good or he's on drugs or something. It's raining and he's just walking around looking about.
Okay, and this guy, is he white, black, or Hispanic?
He looks black.
Did you see what he was wearing?
Yeah, a dark hoodie, like a gray hoodie, and either jeans or sweatpants and white tennis shoes. He's here now. He was just staring.
Oh, he's just walking around the area?
Looking at all the houses.
Okay.
Now he's just staring at me.
Okay. And so it's 1111 Retrieview or 111?
That's the clubhouse.
That's the clubhouse. He's near the clubhouse right now?
Yeah, now he's coming towards me.
Okay.
He's got his hand in his waistband. And he's a black male.
Okay. How old would you say he looks?
He's got a button on his shirt. Late teens.
Late teens, okay.
Mm-hmm. Something's wrong with him. Yep. He's coming to check me out. He's got something in his hands. I don't know what his deal is.
Okay, just let me know if he does anything, okay?
He's got an officer over here.
Yeah, we got him on the way. Just let me know if this guy does anything else.
Okay. These assholes, they always get away. Yeah. When you come to the clubhouse, you come straight in and make a left. Actually, you would go past the clubhouse.
Okay, so it's on the left-hand side from the clubhouse?
No, you go in straight through the entrance, and then you make a left. You go straight in, don't turn and make a left. Shit, he's running.
He's running? Which way is he running?
Down towards the other entrance of the neighborhood.
Okay, which entrance is that he's heading towards?
The back entrance.
following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
Okay.
All right, sir, what is your name?
George. He ran.
All right, George, what's your last name?
Zimmerman.
And, George, what's the phone number you're calling from? All right, George, we do have him on the way. Do you want to meet with the officer when they get out there?
Yeah.
All right, where are you going to meet with them at?
If they come in through the gate, tell them to go straight past the clubhouse and make a left, and then they go past the mailboxes. You'll see my truck.
Okay, what address are you parked in front of?
I don't know. It's a cut through, so I don't know the address.
Okay, do you live in the area?
Yeah, yeah.
What's your apartment number?
It's a home. Oh, crap, I don't want to give it out loud. I don't know where this kid is.
Okay, do you want to just be with him right near the mailboxes, then?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, George, I'll let him know to meet you with you out there.
Actually,
okay?
could you have him call me, and I'll tell him where I'm at?
Okay, yeah, that's no problem.
You need my number, or you got it?
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, no problem. I'll let him know to call you when they're in the area.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay, y'all heard the tape. What is wrong with that non-emergency call? Anybody? AJ Houston.
Well, first of all, the officer said, "Are you following?" He says he's running. He looks high. He's up to no good. His hand is in his waistband as though he was just profiling completely,
mm-hmm.
and then began to chase him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you're walking through a neighborhood and somebody just started walking towards you, you would think this person was particularly high.
Mm-hmm.
Or what's wrong with them? Because, you know, this is where I walk every day. Maybe he's not out there, but evidently it was a ride he'd taken before. But it's definitely profiling and definitely chasing him. So if somebody's chasing you, you definitely have to be on the defense at least.
I mean, at what point does he identify himself that he's neighborhood watch? He doesn't.
But the identifying to the police doesn't matter. When you're following somebody and chasing somebody, a young man, a teenager, that was just walking his usual route, just thinking everything's okay, and then you have some man chasing you, Carrie, let me make this point.
Okay.
We live in a time where they are kidnapping black boys and black girls and white boys and white girls. So you have some white man chasing you that you don't even know who it is. So you have all these things that you've seen in the media going through your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what the problem is.
But if you're the neighborhood watch and you are on patrol, isn't it your responsibility to identify yourself to this young man? There's two particular instances, and we'll break down the timeline in just a second. He encountered Trayvon Martin at 7:11 p.m., and Trayvon Martin was shot by 7:17. So the first encounter, when he said he's walking toward me, wouldn't that be an excellent time to say, I'm on the phone with police, I'm the neighborhood watch, do you live in this community? First opportunity. Second opportunity, wouldn't it be when they encountered each other before the altercation for him to say, I just got through talking to police. I'm George Zimmerman. I'm the neighborhood watch captain. Hey, what are you doing here? Do you live around here? That would have been because you're saying you're in fear of your life, but at the same time, you're pursuing someone in the dark, in the rain, when the police have told you not to, and it's evident that he continues to pursue him because you can hear him being winded. Still, and so you really want to ask yourself, who was in fear of who? Because it appears to me that George Zimmerman was the aggressor, yet he says that it was in self-defense. But anyway, I'm sorry, y'all. I'm just rambling. I'm just venting.
I concur with what you just said. I concur with it. Because on that same night, Martin was on the phone with his girlfriend, and his girlfriend heard Martin ask Zimmerman, "Why are you following me?"
Yep.
And, you know, and Zimmerman asked Martin, "What are you doing around here?"
Mm-hmm.
And then she heard pushing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the girlfriend thinks that it was Martin that was pushed by Zimmerman because she says that Martin's voice changes like something interrupted his speech. That's what she said.
Wow.
Then she said that she heard an argument, and shortly after the call was cut off. Shortly after the argument, the call was cut off. And then she called Martin back but got no answer. Remember that?
Oh, I do. I absolutely do. And I'm going to give you all the timeline as soon as we get Brian Sturgis to tell us what did he hear on that 911 call. What did you just hear on that 911 call?
Non-emergency call. It's completely obvious that he did not identify himself as Neighborhood Watch to Trayvon Martin or while on that non-emergency call. And that's a big thing in that you have to identify yourself and who you are so people know who you are and what you're doing. So you can clearly see that quote unquote protection of the neighborhood or protection of his life was totally out of the question here. I don't think this is a thing of trying to figure out what his motive was. We can clearly, plainly, blatantly, obviously see what his motive was. I'm white, I have a gun, he's black, he's in my neighborhood, I'm tired of seeing this, and I'm going to go do something about it. You clearly hear the police officer tell him, the dispatcher tell him, do not pursue. He said, we do not need you to do that. And after he said that, Zimmerman was silent. I don't know if he wanted to act as though he didn't hear him say it, whether he didn't actually hear him say it because he was already running after Trayvon, but he clearly said, we do not need you to do that. Just based on that, you just disobeyed the orders of a police officer or someone who works with the police force. They clearly told you not to do this. So if I'm the police officer, when I got to the house, it's like, hold on. You told me that this kid was in the neighborhood. You have a gun. Oh, your neighborhood watch. I didn't know that before. You didn't say that. You just a guy with a gun until you identified me that you're a neighborhood watch. And now he's shot and dead in this neighborhood. And I clearly told you not to chase after him. You're going to jail. It's that simple in my eyes. You're going to jail. You have to go to jail. You did what we didn't tell you to do. And as a result of that, you have a young black man who actually was in this neighborhood because he lives there or he's with someone that lives there. And now he's dead for no apparent reason. So in my eyes, you have to be convicted for that. You have to go to jail for that. You have a few things working here. You have a... the racial aspect of it, clearly, he's black, he's white. You have the passive and the aggressive, who was actually harming who. If you look at the average burglary or look up statistics on it, you don't see a lot of single-handed burglaries. I think if anyone's going to have their house robbed, it's usually a multiple-man job because if big objects are being moved, you can't do that on your own. So are you really that nervous about a kid robbing your house that, one, you identified as late teens, and two, that's by himself? And then he told the police officer on the phone that he thought the kid was in his late teens. And I believe it was when he was in court, he said, I thought that Trayvon was just a few years younger than me. Well, what are you, 21 years old? No, you're a full-grown man. So you change your statement. You say you thought Trayvon was just a few years younger than you, but when you were originally on the phone in this first call that you made, you said that he only looks like he's in his late teens. So, you've got the passive-aggressive thing working. You've got the racial aspect of it working. And there's a few other things that are just working in this case and working at what's wrong with what just happened. It's so sad. It's so disheartening to hear. And to know that he's still, to this day, not in jail, it's really upsetting.
I think I heard someone say on another radio show that it was as though George Zimmerman hunted him like he was some animal. And I my mind, like, tried to wrap itself around that statement. And I was like, could it have been... really, let me give you the timeline, and then y'all see why I had to, like, kind of agree with the statement. At 7:11 p.m., George Zimmerman calls police on the non-emergency number to report a suspicious person. That would be Trayvon Martin. That call lasts 4 minutes. At 7:12, Trayvon Martin calls his girlfriend and tells her he's being followed. 7:13, George Zimmerman relays to the dispatcher the suspicious person is running. 7:13 and some other seconds, the dispatcher asks Zimmerman, is he running after Trayvon or are you following him? And George Zimmerman says yes. The dispatcher then says, okay, we don't need you to do that. 7:15, George Zimmerman's call to the dispatcher ends. 7:15, Trayvon Martin is still on the phone with his girlfriend. She hears Zimmerman and Trayvon exchange words. 7:16, Trayvon Martin line goes dead. 7:16, a neighbor calls 911, reports someone screaming for help. There were 14 screams for help in 38 seconds, and no one went out to help. No one. 14 screams in 38 seconds, numerous calls to police, 911 saying there's someone out screaming, there's an altercation going on in my backyard. You know, everybody suspiciously, y'all. Everybody. It, to me, it just seems very suspicious. No one goes out to see. Everyone calls 911 and says, I'm hiding behind my shades. I'm in my house. You know, I'm looking out the kitchen window. You know, I'm in the other room. I'm scared to go out there. But no one goes out there to help. 7:17, shot fired. Scream cease. Okay, 7:17 and a couple of seconds, Officer Smith arrives on the scene. Just a couple of seconds between the time the shots were fired and the first officer arriving on the scene. And at 7:30, Trayvon Martin is pronounced dead. That's crazy. I mean, when I went through this, I couldn't believe it. I mean, it was as though if George Zimmerman had just stayed in his car, all of this was preventable. And one of the officers, one of the detectives, stated that in one of the offense reports, that this whole thing was preventable. Had George Zimmerman, one, identified himself on the two opportunities he had, the first one when he alleges that Trayvon Martin was coming toward the car, that was his first opportunity, and again, when they actually met just before the altercation, if he had just stated, I'm with Neighborhood Watch, if he just stayed in his car, you know what I'm saying? If he had not been carrying a gun, you know, that night, allegedly he was on his way, he had just cooked dinner for his wife and was on his way to the store, which is supposedly what he did every week. So what made him stop and do what he did is just amazing to me. But I'm looking for the statements that Detective Serino made about George Zimmerman, and they were very telling. And he had several opportunities to sit down with George Zimmerman and talk about what happened that night. And I was very surprised that an officer would be that honest. And this is what he said. He said that the encounter between George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin was totally avoidable by Zimmerman. If Zimmerman had remained in his vehicle and awaited arrival of law enforcement, or conversely, if he had identified himself to Martin as a concerned citizen and initiated a dialogue in effort to dispel each party's concerns. There is no indication that Trayvon Martin was involved in any criminal activity at the time of the encounter. Now, that's on one of the offense reports. So that's very telling. Yeah, that's very telling that they knew early on that George Zimmerman was out of line. Now, why wasn't he taken into custody earlier? Don't know. And another thing I want to bring into this whole equation.
Okay.
And I have to take a deep breath, y'all, because I have been dealing with these files for several days. And like I said, the information that was not put out there in the media is just insane. First of all, George Zimmerman was on two types of medications, something that was
mm-hmm.
not put out. I beg your pardon?
No, I said, mm-hmm. I was agreeing, yeah, two ridiculous types of medication for this situation.
Yes, he was on two types of medication. He was on Adderall, and he was also on temazepam. And those meds, from what I understand, are mind-altering. They're typically they're given to people who have ADHD. And so I'm looking for the side effects of these drugs. But one, I know they make you aggressive. Another, they cause hallucinations. Another, I'm trying to find my notes, y'all, excuse me. But the drugs, you know, one of the drugs even indicated don't take this drug and be walking around and looking at anything or anybody. That's actually what was said about the drug. So what was George Zimmerman doing out driving a car and driving a car with those type of drugs in his system? I mean, that's amazing. This is what he was taking. He was taking temazepam, known to cause insomnia and anxiety, aggressiveness, and hallucinations. The U.S. National Library of Medicine says it cautions that after taking temazepam, patients should not be walking around trying to watch anything or anyone, and that if they do not sleep for 7 to 8 hours after taking that medication, they experience memory loss. And we know George Zimmerman probably did not sleep for 7 or 8 hours after that particular incident. And also, this Adderall that he was taking is known to cause worsening mental or mood problems. It causes aggression, anxiety, delusions, depression, hostility, hallucinations, and that's according to drugs.com. So both drugs can cause problematic side effects, including agitation and mood swings. Okay, y'all, what's y'all thought on that?
So, it's ridiculous. You almost have to laugh about it. I don't know if I would want, and I'm in this neighborhood, I don't know if I would want this guy as the head of my neighborhood watch, and you have to take these types of medications just to keep you normal, and they don't even keep you normal. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Just the side effects. That's a whole conversation in itself, because you have to really think if, I guess you could say the system, if the system will allow him to go, if they will let him go free due to the side effects of the medication he was taking. And that's one really upsetting thing to think about, just personally, being a young black man. Will he be let off just off the side effects of the medication he was taking?
He didn't plead insanity.
He didn't?
Did not. He just said self-defense.
But those medications weren't in the system when this whole thing happened.
I think, by the way, the toxicology report was not done on him. One was done on Trayvon Martin, but no toxicology report.
Oh, so that's something that was left out.
Okay.
This is what I think he told the EMTs that night, that he was on those prescription drugs. So, you know, Alberta, you know, would you want to come in contact with someone in the dark of the night, been on those kind of drugs and was carrying a gun?
Honestly, I wouldn't want to come into contact with any non-black person at that time of night. Honestly, that's my honest opinion, because I just don't trust none of them at this point. Because there are arbitrary killings of black people happening all over this country, and I really want to say all over the world, okay? We're being terrorized all over the world, okay? And that's the honest truth. I would not want to come into contact with anybody like George Zimmerman on psychotropic medications. I mean, because I just, you know, that's just my opinion.
And, and by the way, I forgot to tell people, if you just tuned in, you're listening to the topic, does the evidence prove Trayvon Martin was murdered? Did George Zimmerman's medication affect his judgment that night? Did he pursue Trayvon Martin after the dispatcher told him not to? Was he overzealous that night? Did he basically cause this situation to happen just by maybe having the mindset that black people coming into his community was a no-no? So did this whole thing basically happen because George Zimmerman had basically made it all happen in his mind prior to the incident occurring. When he
I think he was a racist before he took any drugs that night, that day. I think he was a racist way before that.
When he made the comment, they always profiled. Away. What does that mean?
Well, if you listen to him, his calls the earlier days, you know, he was always trying to get somebody to pay for the one burglary that he made sound like all the houses in his neighborhood had been burglarized.
Yeah.
And he said, I always get away. But the thing is, I don't think the medication had anything to do with his mindset. Medication don't make you prejudiced.
He was a racist.
Medication don't make you prejudiced. It don't make you, you know, think anybody's anything. I'm saying somebody might look ugly to you or whatever, but I think that he always thought every black man in his neighborhood, because one call he said he walked up to the door, then he walked inside the house. He said, I know the man lives there, and he's white. No black person should be walking up to his door.
Yeah, like he knows who visits there, and obviously no black people visit that house.
They don't belong in the neighborhood.
Exactly. And so, you know, you just wonder, I wonder two things about the charge against George Zimmerman. Why was it not pursued as a hate crime? And then secondly, why is it just second-degree murder? I don't know.
Well, you have to look at the area, the location, the cultural aspects of Sanford, and all the other things that they're used to. See, they're not used to being under the microscope, so all these things are commonplace for them. But under the microscope, they look like a lunch counter in Mississippi.
Okay, AJ. And you know what? And you're probably right, because tell me, somebody explain this to me. Why did George Zimmerman's attorney, Mark Amara, ask the judge to allow the people that he was going to have to testify, that they be allowed to testify out of the public? What does that mean and why? Why can't they go on the witness stand like everybody else? Why would all of the people that are testifying on his list of people to testify all need to testify in private? What does that really mean?
Well, exactly what I just said.
Yeah.
See, under the scrutiny of the microscope, when the American populace is looking and listening, prejudice sounds prejudice.
Yeah.
And your prejudice sounds completely racial.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can keep it under wraps and undercover, you just make it sound like this is my personal observation.
If you've got a question or a comment tonight, get on the phone lines. Call us up at 347-850-8390. If you heard me quote a fact wrong, which I don't think I have, get on the phone line and tell me so. But I don't think I have. I have poured through this file nonstop every chance I got for the last 2 days, and I think I know this case inside and out. And one thing I had a question about, why has this particular case divided this country along racial lines? I'm sorry, if this had been a white kid killed by a black neighborhood watch captain under the same conditions that Trayvon Martin was killed, I'd still say something's wrong with the situation. I mean, I would still say, hey, you know, that's a hate crime. So why is it that in this situation it's divided the country along racial lines?
But one thing, Carrie, when you're black and you commit a crime, you're guilty until proven innocent.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular case, a white man committed a crime, and it looks as though he's innocent until proven guilty.
But, you know, I have a problem. If this had been at 5 o'clock in the evening, let's just say in the summertime, where you could clearly, you know, the visibility was clear, and you could see everything about the person, maybe George Zimmerman could have made some of the statements that he made. But the conditions that night, y'all, were it was dark. It was very dark, and it was raining. So how could George Zimmerman be able to tell so much about Trayvon Martin if the conditions were as I just stated? It's dark. It's raining outside. How is it that he was able to detect all the body language that he said that he detected, he was able to tell how this guy was looking. You know, he looks strange. He's, you know, he looks like he's on some drugs. You can tell all that on a rainy, dark night? I don't know, y'all. I don't think so. I mean, I'm just saying, I don't think so. And tonight we're talking about, does the evidence prove Trayvon Martin was murdered? That's what we're talking about. So if someone can produce some evidence that shows that, you know, it wasn't murder, it was a case of self-defense, please let me hear it. But everything that I've seen so far, it makes me question what the heck went wrong that night. Why is it that this boy was killed in a matter of 6 minutes when he already knew that the police were on their way? What made him chase him? You know, and later when he's questioned by police and they're asking him, you know, why were you running behind him? You know, he begins to, you know, shift his conversation, and he says, well, you know, I wasn't running behind him. I was just actually following him so that I could get the direction of where he was going so I could relay that to the police. Now, if I am in fear for my life, trust me, and the police are on their way, the police going to have to pick it up where I left off, and that's when I made the call, that's all you're getting. So why is it that George Zimmerman to me, I don't know if I believe that. I don't want to call him a liar, but I don't believe that. I just find that hard to believe that if you say this guy was a threat to your life, why did you follow him, as you called it, to continue to give directions after the officer had said stop?
But Carrie, even after that, if you listen.
He what?
Not that if you listen to the tape after that. He calmly tells the police, Oh, no, don't go by the clubhouse. You come down, you make a left, and you go, this was calm, but he's in fear of his life.
Mm-hmm.
He's calmly telling them to pass this and go to, no, come down and make a left and just leave at the back gate. And, you know, it's just a conversation, so there's no fear in the conversation. Fear means, you know, y'all have him come or whatever. But his conversation was just as cool and calm, like, yeah, I'm following this black guy because he looks guilty and I know something's wrong with him on drugs, and I'm following him, but y'all, y'all meet me down here. Everything's all right. I got a gun. Like, I'm going to take care of this already. It was almost like a premeditated decision.
He claims in a statement. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Alberta.
I just want to say that, you know, up until Trayvon Martin was shot and killed, this guy actually assaulted Trayvon Martin. He assaulted him. According to the girlfriend, he pushed Trayvon Martin. After Trayvon Martin had confronted him and said, why are you following me? So obviously George Zimmerman had to have been following him, pursuing him. But see, Zimmerman lied and said that Trayvon Martin approached him as he was walking back to his vehicle. He lied. He actually told a lie when he said that Trayvon Martin came up behind him as he was walking back to his vehicle and attacked him. And you know, I don't believe that. Because his girlfriend was on the phone at the time that George Zimmerman pushed Trayvon Martin. He assaulted him.
You know, he claimed Trayvon jumped out of
his girlfriend. Say what?
He claimed Trayvon jumped out of some bushes. He lost contact with him. He lost eye contact with him, and then all of a sudden Trayvon jumps out of some bushes.
That's fabricated. That's fabricated. I'm just gonna be honest. That's just fabricated to me. I don't believe that. Because
I'm going to go in a minute, though, to a video, and I want y'all to listen to this, where an expert talks about the range in which this gun had to have gone off and why there wasn't residue on Trayvon's clothes. Why wasn't there of any DNA of Trayvon's on this gun? And the expert says because the gun wasn't as close to Trayvon as Zimmerman says it was. He's saying that he believes that Trayvon never straddled him and got on top of him as he stated. He said he believed Trayvon may have been coming toward him, and at that point, when Zimmerman was on the ground, that's when he pulled his weapon and killed Trayvon. Now, that's an expert. And I really question several things because he says, you know, Trayvon had his hand over my mouth and my nose, and he was smothering me. Yo, we're talking about minutes here. You know, this isn't no 20-minute fight. We're talking about a matter of just, I mean, really like a couple of minutes that this whole altercation had to occurred. And they said that Trayvon only had one small abrasion on one of his hands, which indicated the altercation couldn't have taken that long. So if they're struggling, as Zimmerman says that they're struggling, somebody puts their hand over your mouth, don't you bite them? Really? But he was able to get his gun out of his holster and shoot Trayvon. What was Trayvon doing while you're getting your gun out and pointing it at him? I mean, only one
shot
was fired.
Trayvon was hollering for help.
Yeah.
Trayvon was shouting, help, help, help.
Yeah.
And I clearly
and I believe
heard
y'all, and this is my
call.
Opinion, and whoever doesn't like it, they don't have to, listen. In my opinion, everybody who heard those screams from that kid and didn't come out to help him, his blood is on your hands as well. If you let a grown man attack a kid in your backyard and you do nothing, his blood is on your hands as well. Brian is a 17-year-old, one of our guests tonight. If I saw someone attacking this young 17-year-old, and Brian looks like he's pretty tall, y'all, I still will feel compelled to do something. I'm going to yell out there and say something or try to distract, the person who's pursuing. I'm going to do something, And so I just feel like everybody, if you listen to those eyewitness accounts, they're just chilling. Everybody appeared to be like they were just so afraid to go out and do anything. And then no one wants to say Zimmerman did anything wrong. I just find that suspicious.
You know what? There were people in the neighborhood, you probably know this, there were people in the neighborhood who had complained about Zimmerman.
Mm.
Like in the months prior to him killing Trayvon Martin, they had complained about his aggressiveness toward neighbors.
You actually had one guy that was at a meeting that they had in the neighborhood who was pulled out. He was escorted out of the meeting for truly voicing his opinion on what he felt that Zimmerman had been doing and his, like you said, his methods and his efforts to quote-unquote control the neighborhood. And the guy was outraged with what was going on and his complaints. And because he was outraged, they felt as though, I guess, he went too far with what he was saying, and so they decided to pull him from the meeting. So when you have to take it to the extent of escorting someone from a neighborhood meeting about what's going on just for voicing their opinion, they have to feel pretty strongly about this guy. So there's like a couple of thoughts there. Did no one go out and help because they knew who it was? It's like, shoot, that's Zimmerman. Is that Zimmerman again? Oh, man.
That's
I don't know
why.
If I want to go bother him. Because I know, like you say, 17 years old myself, I'm in one of the more troubled inner-city neighborhoods, Inglewood. So if anything happens in our neighborhood, the whole neighborhood is outside. Everyone is here. There was a fire down the street from my house maybe 2 weeks ago, and when I say every last single person, man, woman, child, anything in between and outside of those lines was outside and wondering what was going on. And they stayed out there for hours. People made friends with the police officers and made friends with the firefighters and whoever was out there. They wanted to talk to them and wanted to know what was going on. So, and it's the same way when murders happen. Someone wants to know what's going on, but you clearly hear so many calls for help. And you hear a gunshot, and no one steps outside to see what's wrong. That, like you said, Carrie, that's chilling to know, to know that happened, to hear that. So many calls. I believe you said what 33 calls for help? Did you say?
Mm-hmm. It was 14.
Somewhere in that ballpark. 14 calls for help. That's
calls,
a lot.
14 calls in 38 seconds.
14.
I mean, that's a lot of yelling, y'all, in 38 seconds. Help. Help, help,
that
help,
is
help,
a
help.
Lot.
Yeah.
Like I can't even get 14 yells of help out in one breath. That takes a while. 38 seconds isn't a short amount of time. So to hear this and then immediately following hearing someone help, you hear a gunshot and the help
and the yelling stops.
The yelling stops. But you don't go check it out. You go lay back in your bed as though everything is fine.
Mm.
I mean,
it says
that
a lot.
Is sickening.
Well, what's amazing to me is George Zimmerman you know, says that Trayvon Martin approached him, but we think maybe that didn't happen like that. But that said, when you're looking for somebody in the dark and you got a gun, why is it that you don't appear to have thrown a punch at all? Is it because you had your gun and you knew you didn't need to throw a punch because you had your gun? Because it seems like to me if it was a fight going on, did you land any kind of punches? He had no abrasion whatsoever other than his nose was bloody and those tiny scratches on the back of his head. That's it.
I mean, there couldn't have been a physical altercation. There couldn't have been a physical fight. It was obvious that Zimmerman was the aggressor. He approached Trayvon, and when he approached Trayvon, Trayvon was scared because Zimmerman had his gun. And that's the reason he was running, because he was being chased for no apparent reason, as I would do the same if I'm just walking home and it's late at night. I just came from the store, and now I'm being followed by this random guy. This white guy who looks to be on drugs, and he thinks that I'm on drugs. I'm going to run, too, because it's like, oh,
and then
man,
he confronts Trayvon
right,
and pushes him.
You confront me, you push me, that's a problem. So you confront me and push me, and I'm assuming immediately after pushing him, he pulled his gun. And when he pulled his gun, that's when Trayvon started yelling, help, help. Obviously, he doesn't want to be shot. And then yelling help and not having anyone to come help him, he was shot shortly after that. That's my opinion. I think that's what happened.
That could be very true, because you know the police initially asked George Zimmerman when they played one of the 911 tapes where you could hear someone yelling for help. The police asked George Zimmerman this question, y'all: is that you? And George Zimmerman said, that don't sound like me. What do you mean it don't sound like you? Don't you know if you yelled for help? That doesn't even make sense. Y'all, that doesn't even make sense. How do you not know if that was you that was yelling for help? This is in the file, y'all. George Zimmerman told police, it doesn't sound like me.
And let me tell y'all this. It was some police officers that tried to basically make the neighbors think that it was George Zimmerman yelling for help.
Yes, they did.
That same night. And there was a neighbor that said, I heard George yelling for help. But then he retracts his statement later on.
Wow.
Yeah, there was a neighbor that knows George Zimmerman, a white guy that know him, that retracts his statement later on after he said originally that George Zimmerman was the one yelling for help.
Okay. So they tried to hold Tracy Martin's words to him the day after, I think a day or so after the shooting. They played the 911 tape of Trayvon screen, or the screams for help, let's just say that. And they asked Tracy Martin, is this Trayvon? And he says, I don't think so, or I don't think so, or whatever. Well, they try to hold him to the fact that, okay, it can't be Trayvon Martin because you said, you know, it wasn't your son. But at the same time, Zimmerman said, I don't think that's me. So.
Right, so who's yelling for help?
Somebody
well,
be
I heard the 911 call, and that's a young black boy. That's I know. I heard it. So.
Young
that's
black
clearly
boy
a young black boy.
Life.
Does somebody have that tape? I have lost my I don't know where I buried mine at. I put it on the computer and I left. Does somebody have that tape of the yells that y'all can play? I know I gave it to in Alberta. I would love for y'all to play that, because it is chilling, y'all, to hear those screams and then all of a sudden they just stop after the gunshot. It's chilling. It's just, I mean, it's like. Do you have it, Alberta?
And
wait till you hear this. I mean, it's just absolutely mind-boggling that people heard these people scream. As they heard this person screaming. I mean, my belief is that it was Trayvon. I mean, he was in the wrong place, you know, at the wrong time. He realized he was in trouble, in my best estimation of what happened. And I believe this young man was screaming for help. That's just me. I really believe that. I could be wrong. I'm not a voice expert. But this really seems like someone that's saying, get out here and help me because I am in trouble.
Okay.
You know, and so when you hear it, you'll be able to decide for yourself. But it was just, you know, unbelievable that no one in that neighborhood was unafraid to walk out there and see what was going on. Everybody says, we didn't see the altercation when it began, so we don't know who the aggressor was. Every single statement, they said that, y'all. No one would ever admit that they saw what happened when it started. They all said, oh, we saw Trayvon on top of Zimmerman, but no one ever said that they saw Zimmerman approach or Trayvon approach. You got it, Alberta?
I got it.
Okay, let's go.
I'm going to play it now as loud as I can. Okay, hold on. All right.
4-1, is your emergency for police, fire, medical? Can we please, for what address or location?
I'm at... There's someone screaming outside.
Is that what you are at?
That's right, there is a gunshot. Hurry up.
Okay,
you can't hear that.
Yeah.
That's not the one.
Stanford, Florida, 32771.
Okay, do you see anybody? I don't need you to go outside.
There's someone screaming. I just heard gunshots.
Okay. Do you see anything? I don't need you to go outside, but do you see anything? Do you hear squealing of tires or anything?
No, like, hurry up. They're right outside my house.
Okay. Okay, we have police coming emergency, okay? Are you in Stanford?
Yes.
Okay, and what is your name?
I see a police right now.
And what is your last name? Spell it for me. And how old are you?
I'm 30.
Okay, and do you see the officer?
Yeah, but, like, it's behind the house. It's, like, by the... It's not the front entrance. It's, like... Oh, my God.
Near what? Tell me so I can tell them.
Like, if you're looking at my house, it's behind, like, by my back porch.
Okay. Coming from behind your house?
Yes, like, the back porch.
Did you see anything at all, or you just heard screaming?
I was just screaming and then a gunshot.
Okay. Well, we have an officer there. Did you hear any more gunshots since you've been on the phone with me?
No, but I don't hear any more screaming either.
Okay. Just one gunshot you heard?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, well, we have...
God, hurry up.
Okay, we have officers out there, okay? If anything changes, give us a call back, but we do have several officers there, and one officer is there, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Anything?
I'm not sure, ma'am.
Okay, that might be the wrong one.
Yeah, that's
wrong. Let me go to the third recording.
It's the third one. I think it's the third one.
Yeah, it's the third one, okay. I got it.
911, do you need police, fire, medical?
Maybe both. I'm not sure. There's just someone screaming outside.
Okay, what's the address that they're near? Okay. And is it a male or female?
It sounds like a male.
Okay, and you don't know why?
I don't know why. I think they're yelling help, but I don't know. Just send someone to face up.
Does he look hurt?
I can't see him. I don't want to go out there. I don't know what's going on. So they're sending.
So you think he's yelling help?
Yes.
All right. What is your name on the phone?
There's gunshots.
You just heard gunshots?
Yes.
How many?
This one.
Joey, get down.
No, come here.
Is he no longer yelling?
No one, I don't know. Jeremy, get in here now. Jeremy, get up here.
All right, is he right outside?
Yeah, pretty much out the back, yeah.
Is he in front of it or behind that address?
He's behind my house.
Okay.
Clearly the voice of Trayvon Martin.
I can hear somebody hollering help, and I ain't even over there, okay? I mean, what does she mean? I think I hear somebody hollering help. Really?
Wow.
AJ Houston, that's your first time hearing that. What do you think?
Well, AJ, this is not my first time hearing it. Yeah.
Oh, this is not your first? Okay, gotcha.
No, but I'm saying I was following it when, you know, on MSNBC,
okay.
Reverend Al always had him on there in the beginning. He was going through the whole scenario a year ago when they made this thing prolong this long.
Okay.
Because there's no way that this should be extended this far with the evidence that they have.
Yes. And you know what? That's not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing because if it takes you this long to come up with a defense, you probably don't have one.
But 2 weeks
you know,
ago,
I mean, really, if the truth be known, initially he said he wanted to go under the stand your ground or the castle doctrine, which basically means that, you know, I was protecting my life or my property, and this person was pursuing me, so therefore I killed him. And so he changed that.
But they were trying to get it moved to another district, and then 2 weeks ago they asked for more time.
They've
How
changed
much more
the judge.
Time do you need for now?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think in my, you know, understanding of this file, you know, it seems like the community, I don't even know what kind of black person would want to live out there. I mean, it just really just seems like, you know, one of those communities that you live in, you don't see the sign, but it's up somewhere, you know, it's just, you know, maybe not visible to you, but it says you're not welcome. That's the sign that I see clearly for that particular community. I mean, do you hear the people that's calling in? I mean, they aren't even in danger. And the other person is screaming for help, and nobody goes outside. And that's just two or three of the calls. But this just call after call after call, that was the case.
But from the initial description, it sounded like it was like a townhouse community, maybe a couple of houses that you walk through to get somewhere else. It was just in the middle of something, just gated, a gated community in the middle of somewhere.
Okay. Well, let me read to y'all the comment that Christopher Serino, he's a detective with the Sanford Police, said. This is how he described Zimmerman. He said Zimmerman's actions were overzealous, and he had a little hero complex, but not a racist. He felt Zimmerman appeared scripted and knew the right things to say to police. I 100% agree. I don't know that I believe that the racist part is correct. I think he may be incorrect with that. But he said he appears scripted. You know, all of the calls, if you pay attention, all of the calls, five calls in a row, all start with suspicious. Not ever describing anybody as committing a crime, but every single call started with the word suspicious. That's strange.
Can I ask you a question? The Sanford Police, did they initially want to charge Zimmerman with manslaughter?
No, I think initially they pretended that they believed him. That's what happened. They initially pretended that they were, you know, 100. Remember the police chief resigned over there, somebody by the name of Lee, I believe.
Yes.
For somebody, Chief Lee, he resigned because he got so much heat about the fact that they would not charge George Zimmerman. But they were saying that George Zimmerman's story was consistent with what they found.
No, but it was one policeman on that day said that it wasn't consistent. That was the one that brought him in. He said the story wasn't consistent with what he thought happened from being on the scene.
Uh-huh. Was that Timothy?
Police chief wanted to let him go. So that's why police chief resigned.
So you have a chief of police that resigns, and then you have the judge that was on this case step down. He didn't want to be a part of it anymore.
And also the former state attorney for the prosecution also recused himself from this case, from George Zimmerman's case as well.
So somebody somewhere knew that for some reason Zimmerman was going to get off.
Mm.
And these three people decided to step down
mm-hmm.
because they knew it. The way that our system is set up and the way that this world is set up, they knew white man with a gun, black man in the wrong neighborhood.
And guess they what? I concur with you 100% because that's mm-hmm. what I was thinking. I was thinking that George Zimmerman, before I even called in, I thought about it yesterday. I said, he's going to get off. I said,
no.
just mm-hmm. like, he is going to get and, off. I'm telling
and
you.
And that, and it's the truth. It's the way that our system is set up. You have 2.2 million people that signed a petition saying that Zimmerman should be arrested and put in jail for what's happened. And now his trial is just about to start. I mean, after all of this, like you say, the country has been racially divided because of this. The blacks are tired of putting up with this. These three people that decided to step down from the positions that they were in this case knew. They were in their right minds when they made this decision, and they knew that they did not want this case on their hands. As a judge, it's like, man, I know that they're going to let this man off. I know I got the final verdict and the final say so in it, but from what I've seen and from what I've heard, they're going to find a way to let this white man off. I don't want to be involved in it.
Get him off.
I don't. And that's the best decision, in my opinion. I applaud the man that decided to step down. That decided to step down because that is the best decision, in my opinion. Because this is something in this world, in this day and age, that can be blown completely out of proportion, and it'll be just like the blood of Trayvon being on that judge's hands. I completely agree with her. I would have stepped down as well because this is something that I mean, look at how long it's gone without him going to jail. You have to at some point think, Zimmerman's going to get off.
Yes.
And when he gets off, I'm going to be the one that's looked at for allowing him to get off.
I disagree with you. Listen, y'all, if you just tuned in, you come to the stage tonight. We're talking about, does the evidence prove Trayvon Martin was murdered? George Zimmerman's medication, did that affect his judgment that night? Did he pursue Trayvon Martin even after the dispatcher told him not to? Was he overzealous that night? And did his comments about they always get away, was that a motive to kill Trayvon Martin?
He also made a racial epithet.
He called him
effing coons. He said effing coons. Remember?
I know he told the police he was an effing punk. But you know what?
Did he call him a coon? It's on the tape.
Well,
he said effing coons. It's on the tape. But the police turned in a version to the attorneys of Martin's family without those words.
Wow.
Yeah. The police,
you know,
after police turned in a tape without those words.
And, you know, this is the thing. This is why I say he won't get off, y'all. And if I was a betting woman, I'd bet y'all money on it tonight. You know what? I think I would. I tell you why. I think initially they hid behind the fact that everybody didn't know the story. But the file that I have, you know, it is very telling. And so I think that they know that there's too many people that know. I mean, we have all the offense reports that were written by all the police. We have the autopsy reports. We have all of those things. It's just too many people that know that that's just not the truth. Let's just say that. So I don't think, coupled along with the fact that George Zimmerman has a past. Y'all remember he had battery against a law enforcement officer? And then he had a situation where he had a restraining order from a previous girlfriend. So George Zimmerman is not somebody who is, like, without a record, you know, who, I mean, when you take the medication, you take the prior record, you take all of these calls that he made to police basically saying the same thing. Trayvon Martin was just an accident waiting to happen. He was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. It could have been anybody that was black walking through that subdivision that night that would have probably came to the same fate. That's really what I believe. It wasn't about Trayvon Martin. It was about any black person walking through that community and George Zimmerman coming upon them. They were in danger. I mean, this guy was carrying a 9mm, I'm sorry, is it 9mm Kel-Tec. I mean,
but Carrie,
that's a lot of firepower, y'all.
But Carrie, one thing you have to ask yourself. Go through every community around here, see all the people that are on the Neighborhood Watch program and see how many people are actually armed.
I don't know of any.
I know, but you see, George Zimmerman had failed. He wanted to be a policeman, but he failed the test.
Yeah. Somebody, I don't know if it was a mental evaluation that he failed, but somebody was smart and did not pick him. Yeah. I don't know. I just see, you know, so many things wrong. Let me ask you, AJ. Brian and Alberta think that George Zimmerman is going to walk. Do you think he's going to walk?
Oh, no. Because see, when you get to the point to where it's microscopically looked at, and you go through all these things, there's you have these biased juries, but, you know, you have to pick a jury of peers, which is not going to be all white people, even in Sanford.
Right.
So I don't see how they could have any information that they could present, aside the information that we've already looked at, that would make George Zimmerman seem as though he didn't pursue him, as though he was attacked. Because even when he said in the beginning of the tape that he was walking toward me, now he's looking at me. And then he started running. So if he's running, he's not running towards you, he's running away from you. So
yeah.
So that dispels any other thing that George Zimmerman said happened after he began to pursue him.
Now, I'll tell y'all something that's suspicious, and y'all tell me what you think. On the screen, if you look at the screen right now, we got three pictures of George Zimmerman. One is with him standing upright, and you can see his jeans and his jacket. Does that look like a man who's just really been in a fight? I mean, if you pay attention, the man doesn't have any dirt on him. He doesn't have any grass on him. It's a rainy night. He claims that he just got out of the grass with this guy. Pay attention, y'all. They said the back of his clothes was wet, but I never saw any pictures of the back of George Zimmerman's clothes. Okay? I see the front picture. Front picture looks pretty clean to me. But I haven't seen anything that shows grass stains or anything on the back of George. If they say the jacket was wet, that's consistent with the freaking fact that they were walking in the rain. If it doesn't have grass stains and mud on it, I question whether he was in the ground. He was on the ground. All
that
was
the evidence I was saying. That's all I'm saying is once you look at the evidence, you look at the timeline, and you see that none of the things could have occurred the way George Zimmerman tried to present them.
Mhm. And that's why I question he'll walk. I mean, I think, you know, if all this hadn't become very, very public and all those protests and all those things hadn't gone up, you know, forth and all this stuff hadn't been in the media, George Zimmerman probably would have walked. But I think it's a case in which he reminds me of a case that happened in Oklahoma City. There was a pharmacist named Jerome Erslin that was robbed one night by two young men. They came into his pharmacy. One had a gun, one didn't. But the pharmacist was, I think, a marksman. But anyway, he had two guns under the counter. So when they came in with one of them pointing a gun at him right at closing time, he just pulled his gun from under the counter and just shot the one that didn't have a gun one time in the head, took him down. Instead of him stopping at that point because the one that did have the gun ran out of the store. Well, what he did, he pursued the one that had the gun, followed him outside the store, and emptied the gun. Then he returned inside the store, stepped over the boy who he had shot, went and got the second gun, loaded it, and then came back and emptied it into the young man. Well, initially, it was a clean shot. The first one he would have gotten completely off with because he could have simply said it was self-defense. They were robbing us. We were in fear for our life, so I shot him. But the fact that he came back and shot him additional times, then that's cold-blooded murder. Well, the same with the situation with George Zimmerman. Had Trayvon came to his car and assaulted him in his car and he killed him somewhere in the proximity of the car, it would have looked like Trayvon was the aggressor. But the fact that George Zimmerman got out of the car, pursued him, you can even hear him running toward him, and he even acknowledges to the dispatcher, I'm running behind him. That says he's the aggressor. So to me, it's almost the same scenario in which when you pursue someone to that degree, you are the aggressor. Therefore, that's murder. That's just my opinion, and I don't see how any jury, white or black, in this country can find George Zimmerman not guilty. That's my opinion. I just can't see that. Now, it could happen, but I guarantee y'all, there's going to be problems if that happens. I mean,
it's
coming from center stage. Say what?
There's going to be ridiculous problems. Yeah, correction. Oh. I, I don't believe he's going to walk. I believe someone somewhere has a heart. I believe he will be convicted to prison. But I was just saying, with those three people that decided to step down from their positions, at that time, with what was going on, it's like, oh, man, I think this guy may walk. Now, like you said, now we have too many people that know extremely too much. So there's no way in this world that he could be allowed to walk. But at that time, when they did decide to step down, I don't think enough people knew enough about what was going on for him to be proven guilty. So their first thought was, man, I need to get out of here, and I need to get out of here as quick as possible. But, yeah, all signs lead to imprisonment. It has to. Everything lines up with him being guilty. Nothing in any of the information that we have and any of the articles that we've read and any of the research that we've done can prove him innocent, can justify what he did. And there's just no way. I mean, seeing it from a young black man's perspective, of course the first thing that you think is, yeah, he should go to jail because he's a white guy and he shot a black kid. I mean, that's the first thing you think. But when you really delve deep into it, and you see the facts behind this, and you think about what actually happened that night, it shouldn't have even been a case of wrong place, wrong time. The kid was just walking home.
And that's what, that's what concerns me so much when I read the threads on these stories about this case, and people are calling Trayvon Martin a thug, and I'm thinking, a thug? Do they know what a thug is? What? I mean, what has he ever done in his background that indicates that he's a thug? I mean, he was a kid being a kid. And so,
a lot of black men, think about a lot of black men, that they're thugs, that they're predestined to criminality. You know, that's what they think.
And I mean, that's how they classify all Chicago. They went to his Facebook page to find a picture of him, you know, with the gun in the picture. Then a picture of him smoking marijuana. So they're trying to, but this isn't evidence because this, if you didn't know the person, you can't bring anything in that has nothing to do with the case. But they're trying to put all this out in the public to smear his image.
Well, in the country where I live, down here, they let 17-year-olds shoot guns. So I don't know what him showing him pointing a gun or having a gun, that doesn't, I mean, what does that mean? I mean, AJ and I live in an area where.
But it's an image thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you could say justify murders. It's the way to classify murders in Chicago. Every person that dies that's young and is black. It's always considered gang violence. We had a young woman, Hadia Pendleton, that died, and their first thought, another kid lost to gang violence. Hadia Pendleton was just at the inauguration a couple of weeks before that. What does that have to do with gang violence? She went to the park with her friends after she finished taking her finals one day after school. What does that have to do with gang violence? Like you said, it's an image thing. It's the way that they portray everything negative that happens when it involves killing in the black community. Like, I just lost two friends. It's crazy because I was playing basketball with them the day before. They got shot, and they got shot sitting on the porch of their home. A guy approached the porch with the gun and asked them if they knew someone that was in the gang. Neither of them were in the gang. And he shot the first guy 11 times, and he shot the second guy 3 times. And one's in critical condition in the hospital right now. The other one died, and his funeral was tomorrow. And immediately, gang violence. Neither of my friends were in gangs. Like I said, they both played basketball. One enjoyed rapping. 3.5 GPA, 23 on the ACT. These were great kids. One of them was headed to Western Illinois University next year. What does that have to do with gang violence? But it's an image that's put out. It's how they portray us. It's how they see us. It's how they want us to look. And that's what I guess they use to make this thing seem acceptable. So if they could get that image of Trayvon being a thug out, it's like, oh, yeah, well, that's cool because he just got another thug off of our streets.
Exactly.
But that's not the case. It's not the truth.
I mean, exactly how you said it, like, you know, that's how they portray black people, you know, as thugs and criminals.
Bringing this image thing in, like I have three nephews, two of them in and out of jail all the time. And I was talking to them and their friends, and I was trying to explain. Like, they said, they call me Uncle Jeff. They said, Uncle Jeff, why you always make us pull our pants up? Everybody wearing them like that. I said, okay, if you were in Pakistan or Afghanistan or Israel, and you like the clothes of the people of the enemy of Israel, so you want to buy some enemy clothes and wear them because you think it's fashionable.
Mm.
But you get mad when people start shooting at you.
Yeah.
But you think it's all right to dress like the enemy, but you don't understand there's a war. See, there's a war in America right now. And the war is definitely a cultural war. There's a war on our black boys in America because they talk about the graduation rate, the dropout rate, but there's a war, but everybody dresses like the enemy.
I agree. But it's cool.
There's a war on our black girls also, not just the black boys.
Oh yeah, I'm in agreement with that, but I'm saying, but when you dress like the people that you're at war with, it's kind of hard to pick what side you're on.
I agree. Hey, y'all, let's listen to the expert tell us about. This is something I pulled off of YouTube. This is an expert talking on an HLN show to explain. It's a short 3-minute audio where he's telling what the autopsy means. It's going to be surprising, y'all. Listen. Okay, let's go. Here we go.
I'm here with Joseph Scott Morgan. He's a death investigator. And I want to take a look at the autopsy, ladies and gentlemen. I want to show you the autopsy and have Joseph explain to us what it means and what the evidence shows us. And let's begin here. What does this show us and what does it tell you?
Absolutely, Vinny. The most significant thing that we can see at this level is obviously the area that's been indicated right here. That is the entrance of the gunshot wound. This was identified by the medical examiner who did the autopsy, and we can see these little dots that are indicated around this area. This is referred to as stippling. This is the residue that's left over after the actual round has passed through the body, entered into Trayvon's body, and passed through his heart. And what does it mean? Well, what this means, this gives us an indication of range of fire. How far away were these two individuals away from one another when the weapon was discharged? In other words, like I said earlier, relationship. What's the relationship between Zimmerman and Martin? And this is critical to our case. Okay, let's take a look at the next photo here from the autopsy. These are the hands of Trayvon Martin. What, if anything, does this tell you? Okay. Incidental finding over here, scars. We all have these on our body. However, this area right in here, this is what some people have held as being significant. I don't really know. It's a 1/4 by 1/8 inch abrasion. The medical examiner is not very clear as to whether or not this is healing or if it's fresh, but this I do know. This is the only injury that Martin has on either one of his hands. So this would indicate that there's not a lot of defensive posturing that's going on. There's not a lot of contact that's going on that you would see in like a protracted fight. Okay, after reading the autopsy, can you demonstrate for the ladies and gentlemen, the jury, how far away and what the relationship was between Jordan and Trayvon Martin at the time of the shooting? Absolutely. I'm going to be Zimmerman. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what we believe is that what the police have said is that Zimmerman, the back of Zimmerman's clothing was wet when they viewed him. And this is very interesting. It's critical relative to the range of fire. This is one thought. Zimmerman very well may have been on the ground at this point. His weapon is holstered. Martin is advancing on him. He's standing over the top of him. And as he is coming down towards Zimmerman, Zimmerman raises the weapon. Now, this is significant. The muzzle of the weapon touches the garment. Now, we know that that Martin was wearing a hoodie. We believe, as everybody can identify with, the clothing falls away. There's a conflict in the report. This weapon is fired. It discharges through the hoodie, through the T-shirt. The firearms examiner identifies this as a contact wound. The medical examiner says that the wound to the body was actually an intermediate distance, which means there was distance between the two.
What's intermediate? How long?
Intermediate, we're talking about 2 inches to 12 inches.
2 to 12 inches.
Yes, sir.
Contact, you're saying, because the hoodie is hanging off of the body.
Absolutely. And it's contact.
But intermediate, because the hoodie is not next to the body, so you'd have that 2 to 12 inches there plus the contact here.
Exactly. And this goes to one other issue. Why is Trayvon's DNA not on the weapon? Well, you've got a barrier in between the weapon and Trayvon's body. Anything that enters the body and anything that's dispersed out of the body is not going to catch contact on what we refer to as blowback.
Did y'all catch that?
Mm-hmm.
We did. That came from, let me give credit to where that came from. That was some audio from HLN's After Dark. So that's where that audio came from. But did y'all hear that they said that the contact was not right up on each other like Zimmerman has indicated? So they're saying that they had to be at least 2 inches to 12 inches away due to the way that the bullet hole is showing in the clothing and the entrance mark of the body. So did Zimmerman not, was Zimmerman not truthful when he told us the distance in which he and Trayvon were from each other at the time that he shot Trayvon? Anybody?
Well, first and foremost, he said there was only one visible wound on his hand, which they didn't know if it was healing or if it was fresh.
Mm-hmm.
But if you hit somebody and Zimmerman say, you know, his nose and he was pummeling somebody, you'd have more than one wound on your hand, more than one abrasion. So that
I would think if you're for an altercation, a life-threatening altercation, they both should have had some major marks on them, don't you think?
Yeah, but I'm saying, but just one wound on one knuckle means that there were no punches, or maybe one punch if anything. But if somebody's chasing and coming at you, you would definitely try and get them off you.
Now, another thing that's interesting, Zimmerman was asked by several officers on the night of the shooting, after the shooting, do you need medical attention? Zimmerman was seen by the EMTs for less than 17 minutes, and he sought medical attention from his private physician later, like days later, after the incident. So if he was almost knocked unconscious, as he said, and his head was, you know, dizzy and woozy after this altercation, and his nose was broken, as he indicated, don't you think they would have had to administer a little more than 17 minutes, the EMTs, that is? Don't you think they would have needed to give him a little bit more aid than just 17 minutes?
Definitely. But if his head was dizzy and woozy, that's probably because of the medication.
I have to agree. That really may be where that was coming from. I'm just saying. So it's just so many inconsistencies. Now, y'all, if we can dissect this case, then we ain't, you know, like the professionals going to do it in the courtroom on the 10th, but if we can sit back and look at all the things wrong, and we've shot bullet holes all through this defense tonight, and if we can do it, we know the professionals should be able to at least bring up these issues before the court.
And we've done it in 2 hours. Literally, hour and a half, 2 hours. You have a 17-year-old kid and two to three other adults just speaking, just voicing our opinions, and we've come down to what could be and what should be the reason that Zimmerman is convicted. Neither one of us are professionals in this category. We don't get employed to do this. Just your average, everyday people, and we've figured out, or at least we feel as though we figured out what's going on and what happened. It shouldn't be that hard.
You know what? Wait, I hope they don't call us to testify, y'all, but listen, we probably could close this case. They're expecting it to go on for 30 days. We could probably close it up in 2 hours.
2 hours. That's it?
I'm just saying. Because, you know, another thing that, you know, remember I said early on that I thought that George Zimmerman was very rehearsed and he knew the right things to say to the police, and then I read to you all what the detective is. Well, another thing, George Zimmerman was a student at Seminole State College about to complete a 2-year degree in criminal justice at the time of the shooting. So, again, you know, I studied criminal justice too, y'all. That's all you talk about. That's all you talk about in class. I mean, that's what you get down to the nigga. You want to know about police work. How does it work? You know, that's the ins and outs of studying criminal justice. So, or a lot of it anyway. So I just wonder, you know, is that what George Zimmerman learned, this lingo? You know, I mean, he absolutely knew the right things to say once he got the police on the phone. And once he did his statement to police. It's very clear that George Zimmerman knew that he had to set a picture of him that made Trayvon Martin appear to be the aggressor, you know, and he was, you know, just defending himself. And, you know, he says that when Trayvon had him on the ground and he had his mouth covered and his nose covered and he was smothering him to death, you know, that he managed to slide just a little bit. And that was at the point in which he reached, he felt Trayvon was going to reach for his gun, so he pulled it up and shot him one time. You know, I mean, how did Trayvon even know you had a gun? I mean, it just unless you probably already had it pulled.
Exactly. And that's why he was yelling, help, so many times.
Yes. I mean, because, you know, the thing is, really, you know, I cannot imagine an altercation that resulted in somebody getting killed in such a short period of time. There was barely enough time for the girlfriend to hear them come in contact with each other before the shots were fired. I mean, what he's saying is just inconsistent with what the evidence shows. I mean, that's what we're leading tonight, y'all. The topic was, does the evidence prove Trayvon Martin was murdered? Listen, y'all, I mean, I don't know what y'all came up with tonight, but in my opinion, the evidence showed that this was not a clean shot. I don't know. Brian Sturgis, do you agree? Somebody's got some noise. You know, does the evidence prove Trayvon Martin was murdered?
I mean, yeah, clearly. I said that earlier. I believe that the evidence does show that he was murdered. Zimmerman was clearly the aggressor and chasing him down after being told not to do so. Like I said, it shouldn't have been a case of wrong place, wrong time, black man, white man. It shouldn't have been a case of that. He was in the wrong neighborhood. He was in the right neighborhood. That's the way that he decided to take home. So he was doing nothing wrong at the time. And as the police officer said, this was all preventable by Zimmerman simply staying in his car. But when you think about things like Zimmerman saying that his jacket was wet or the back of his clothes were wet, but there were no pictures taken of the back of his clothes being wet, saying that there was a physical altercation, I know, in all of my days of being in physical altercation, staying here in Englewood, I have many bruises. And you gain several bruises from one single physical altercation, just one. Doesn't matter how big or how small. There's going to be a cut, a scratch, a scrape, an abrasion, something somewhere that's going to symbolize the physicality of what you were just in. And to say that there's none of that, but you claim there was a physical altercation, you see clearly that that's a lie. So, with him being in law school and in criminal justice, like you say, everything was rehearsed. He learned exactly what it was that he needed to say, and that's probably the reason that that he felt as though he could call the police and be so calm while on the phone, because he knew what to say. He didn't have to freak out. He didn't have to sound like a concerned citizen, because he's in class for this every day. So he knew exactly what to say. And with the medication he was on, he was probably hallucinating and thinking he was a police officer because he's taking classes for it and wanted to go pursue someone and make them his first victim. And it's a terrible joke I just made, but, I mean, hey, what kind of medicine do they have you on? Who would trust the lives of the people in the neighborhood in your hands? And why wasn't he pulled down from his position as one of these neighborhood watchmen after so many complaints had been made? It's very clear, and there's so many things, so many signs pointing toward him being the murderer. So many signs pointing toward Trayvon Martin being murdered. There's so many different things to think about.
I completely agree. You know, along the lines of what you just said, in 2008, George Zimmerman completed an application to be a part of the Seminole County Citizen Academy. And he wrote, I guess you had to give an explanation for why you wanted to be a part of this little group. And he wrote, I hold law enforcement officers in the highest regard, as I hope to one day become one. Y'all,
oh.
That's mouthful.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, you know,
well,
I mean,
you know,
was
I just
he like
to
a
say
funny
his grades
fight?
Weren't good enough to become a law enforcement officer. His grades were not good enough because he got D's in criminal justice and juvenile delinquency. And he got a C in a course called Evil Minds.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Didn't
okay.
know that.
Wow.
He was placed on academic probation in 2011.
No.
Yeah,
okay.
At Seminole State College or whatever, Seminole State College. Yep.
Wow. Okay, so, you know, this is something he says he loves, but at the same time he doesn't even have the, I guess with attention deficit hypotential, what is it, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, maybe he couldn't, I don't know, hold his attention, you know, in one place long enough to make good grades. I don't know. But maybe that was an indicator that that wasn't the right profession for him anyway. You know, because that law enforcement, you would really need a high attention to detail. And someone who's ADD, and I know someone personally who's ADD, I know that you have a hard time concentrating.
Uh-huh.
You know, your mind is just racing. I mean, just to put it mildly. And so, you know, again, like Brian said, why was he even over the neighborhood association? The guy had clearly had problems. And you know what's sad? His father, in a statement to police, you know, went down there and said, you know, everything they're saying on TV about George is a lie. You know, George wasn't a racist. George used to actually mentor young black kids. And I thought, what?
What? I've had a couple of mentors in my time, and I don't know if he would meet the qualifications.
Well, there's a lot of racist teachers mentoring black kids. What
you know, I mean, really, I thought, you know, either he just wasn't telling the truth or George has some ulterior motives for mentoring black kids. I don't know. But that's one of the things that his father told the police, you know, and he was very upset, you know, and he felt like George was being railroaded of all things. And, you know, he said that George didn't grow up in a racist home, you know, that just wasn't what they were about. But I just wonder if that's true, because when you just listen to his language, I mean, every black person was suspicious. You know, that sounds racist. You know, maybe they were racist and didn't know. Maybe George, I can't speak for his father, but maybe George was racist and didn't know he was racist. But, you know, if every black person you see is suspicious, then you got a problem. It's not the black people, it's you that's got the problem. You know, if it's a free country and you can't walk through a neighborhood without someone calling the police and saying that you look suspicious, then something's wrong with you. I mean, I just have to say that, you know, I just find it's very strange that George Zimmerman called the police on 5 different occasions, and every time he called, it was to report a black person. Never once did he report a white person. I have some questions about that. You know, and so there's just so many things. Huh?
No, I'm going to say we live in such a culturally diverse nation that when you live in an isolated community of just yous, whether it's a black community, white community, or whatever. Whatever your opinion is, it's the opinion of the group. So you may not think that you're racist, or you might not think that you don't like a certain culture, because everybody around you thinks like you.
Mm.
So from his initial conversation, when he said, they always get away.
Yeah, yep.
This made it seem as though this one wasn't getting away.
Yeah, yeah, it did. And you know, and the sad thing about that one is when he said it, he was like in his mind, if you listen to him very closely, it was almost as though he had said in his heart that, you know, these people shouldn't be getting away and somebody needs to do something. And I think that night he took it upon himself to do something. That's
which
the sad part of that.
Which makes
yes.
him premeditate.
Yes. Then that would be a hate crime, and that would be murder.
Exactly.
I don't know. I mean, yeah. Yeah,
along with the Coon statement, definitely gives you, an unbiased look at somebody else's judgment.
I don't know. Let me ask y'all. Yo, we're down to our last 10 minutes of the show. If y'all were standing on the stand today, and y'all had George Zimmerman's fate in your hands, what would y'all be telling the jury? I mean, based on the evidence that we discussed tonight, and y'all, I have not fabricated one thing. This is information that I received from
the law enforcement agency up there in Stanford about the George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin case. That said, if y'all had an opportunity to, you know, be a part of closing arguments, what would y'all say about this case to determine that if it could potentially determine the fate of George Zimmerman?
Well, I would say to the jury, say that this is clearly a hate crime. It is a crime of passion. It is a racist act carried out by an overzealous neighborhood watch leader who profiled Trayvon Martin because he was a black boy walking through the neighborhood. I mean, that's what I would tell the jury.
Wow.
I would clearly make this about a hate crime, and it should be, you know, this should be a case where he gets life in prison, to be honest. You know, he needs to be in prison for the rest of his life for this hate crime.
Whoa. And, you know, it's funny you say that. The story that I told you about the situation with Jerome Ursuline in Oklahoma City, initially they held him a hero. But ultimately, when it went to trial, and they could, that particular case completely divided Oklahoma City, but along racial lines, of course. But ultimately, Jerome Ursuline got life in prison.
Okay.
Yeah, life in prison. Yeah.
That's
so
good.
It could happen. Well, I don't know. Let me take that back. I don't think you can get life in prison for second-degree murder, can you?
Well, you know. That's why I said he should get it, but, you know, you can't get it for second-degree murder, obviously. But if they add hate crime to it, then he probably could if they add hate crime. But, see, they just want to charge him with second-degree murder when, in fact, it is a hate crime and also second-degree murder. See?
Brian Sturgis, what you think?
Yeah, no holds barred. I just let him have it completely. It's clearly a hate crime with the racial slur being used. You know, obviously the black and white thing going on that. You have, in some ways, and what we younger people like to say, a wannabe. You're a neighborhood watch officer who wishes he could have been an actual police officer, who now feels the need to pursue a victim who wasn't actually or shouldn't have been the victim of anything. And you put yourself in a position that you shouldn't have put yourself in. You disobeyed clear orders not to pursue and decided to pursue, which is a problem in itself. You heard the lady who was on the phone. They told her, man, we do not need you to go outside. What did she do? She stayed in the house. Maybe she should have went outside. She should have been the one doing the moving, because maybe that could have helped Trayvon keep his life if she would have through some sort of distraction, but that's another discussion in itself. You were told not to leave your car, and you left your car anyway. You were the aggressor. You had a gun. You chased this young man down for no apparent reason. And you lied in your statements, saying that there was an altercation, saying that you were pushed, saying that Trayvon jumped out of bushes, just so many different things that were fabricated. And in your story, you're doing jail time, a point-blank period. You're guilty. In my opinion, if I'm on that stand.
Wow. AJ Houston, what would you tell him in closing arguments about this case?
Well, first of all, you know, with my locks as long as they are, they probably wouldn't pick me, but what I would tell him, I would tell him first that Neighborhood Watch is exactly what it sounds like. It's a position of observation. It is not an armed or aggressive position. So to pursue and run and chase anybody down after you were told not to, and even if your language says that they always get away, but this one didn't, which means that it's premeditated. At that particular point, that I got one, he's not getting away. So I think it's premeditated murder, and regardless of what they say, it's definitely a hate crime, and a hate crime can be just from his previous emergency and non-emergency calls to the police department.
Wow.
Because, you know, everybody looks suspicious. Just walking through the neighborhood, they were suspicious. Just anywhere they were, as two suspicious characters. And it went from one burglary to a lot of burglaries. We've had all these burglaries in the community, so I'm watching out. But there were no calls about any burglaries between those 4 or 5 days that he made those calls.
Hmm. Wow. So, y'all, that's going to have to be the final comment. Listen, y'all, I enjoyed y'all tonight. You know what? I think we solved the case. I'm sorry. I think the jury can listen to this two-hour show and close the book and go home. I mean, seriously, save everybody a whole lot of time and the taxpayers a whole lot of money, because I think tonight, with all that we presented, you can sit in the jury box to decide for yourself. But I think what tonight's show proved was that George Zimmerman was a wannabe cop who hunted Trayvon down like an animal, because he had decided in his heart that these black suspicious males that keep coming through this neighborhood, the police ain't doing nothing about it. And that particular night, he decided he would. And so what resulted as of him having that mindset, Trayvon Martin is dead today. And so I think the jury, I don't know how they're going to go in on this case. They did not move it from the Sanford area. So, you know, we'll see. But I hope that the people that were in that community that night always have Trayvon Martin sitting at the foot of their bed, because somebody could have gone out that night if they did nothing but yell out the door to let Zimmerman know that they were watching and they were calling the police. I think one person came out after the shooting and told George Zimmerman, asked George Zimmerman what happened, you know, what happened, and he told him that he shot him, and the guy said, well, I'm calling the police, and George Zimmerman told him, don't bother, I already called them. You know, so that almost speaks of, like, arrogance, that you knew the police were on their way, and yet this altercation took place to the point that you killed this young man. So that's very telling, and it just says so many things on so many levels. And on June 10th, 2013, the trial begins, and we'll all see the conclusion, but we wanted to do the show ahead of time, ahead of the trial, so that we can say what we thought before the jury sat in the box, in case they're listening, and we hope that they do some kind of way get a hold to this tape. But in case they're listening, maybe all of this evidence won't enter the courtroom, but hopefully it will, because I think the things that we talked about tonight clearly show that Trayvon Martin was in the wrong place at the right time, being hunted by the wrong person, because George Zimmerman had no mercy on that kid, and he had just decided, and I believe the medications that he was on affected his judgment, along with his racist belief, and I think that determined Trayvon Martin's fate. So, you know, y'all will see, and we're going to, of course, do a follow-up show once we find out what the jury finds in this particular case. But I'd like to say thank you to my guests for being with me tonight, Alberta Parrish, A.J. Houston, Brian Sturgis. Thank you so much for coming tonight. And also a reminder, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. Also, y'all, a reminder, we're here each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. This is what we do. Every Friday night, we're breaking cases, y'all. We are sitting in the jury boxes on some of these cases, and we're telling you, based on the evidence that we have, what we think ahead of some of these trials. And listen, y'all, come back next week. Join me. Tell a friend, tell a coworker, tell a family member to check out Center Stage. Again, I'd like to say thank you to my guests. Thank you to the audience for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
A low down person, because in my opinion, the way he has